Welcome into the Irish NFL show. As we get closer and closer, a week out from the NFL schedule being released, we're taking our final recap of the draft. And with that, we're going to talk to Bobby Skinner from Talking Giants. Bobby's sidekick was on previously in advance of free agency, so it's delighted to get his partner in crime on the show. Bobby, you're very welcome for the first time to the Irish NFL show.
I'm excited. You guys, I've been following you guys for a long time. Ever since we started doing Talking Giants, I really realized how big the international NFL fan base is, because they were some of our earliest, most diehard listeners to this. When we were getting 100 downloads a show, we were getting people from Spain and Ireland and the UK who were looking for it. And I really like the international side of the NFL. I think it's one of the rare things they do extremely well. You know, whether it's the pathway program, the international games. So I'm excited to jump on.
Yep.
I was telling you guys before, I'm excited to be a guest on a show that Joe Shane's been a guest on.
Yeah,
it's great to have you back on board.
Yeah, absolutely. The premier, if you're looking for your Giants info online, YouTube, wherever it is, there is no better podcast. And that's solidifying it right there. I'm a bona fide Talking Giants fan. My son is a huge Bobby Skinner fan. We always look for the latest updates. If you need your Giants info, that's the place to go. John Boy Media, yep. Talking Giants. That's
fantastic coverage of the Giants all season long, and the podcast, Bobby. It's you're giving us compliments. I have to say, I've been listening to you for a year in a year out. You're talking about international fans. I've been one for quite a long time, so we really true recognize the great working with you and Justin Do. Speaking of great work, it was great work for us tonight, the draft, because the draft kicked off at 1 o'clock in the morning here, and we broadcast it for 4 hours, and we discussed every pick in length. And before the draft actually kicked off, our host, Connor, asked me, what do I believe the right thing for the Giants to do, and what do I believe is the thing that they will do? And I said wide receiver is what they would do, and they felt that was the right thing to do. And that wasn't because of whether I have a mixed opinion on Daniel Jones. It was more about, if we bring in a young quarterback at some stage, to be an expectation he would play next season. We don't have the best of players around him. You know, you'd be concerned around how well he would succeed. Okay, we've done some stuff in the offensive line of free agency. I know we're going to come to that, but 2 weeks on now, are you still comfortable that they took did the right thing in terms of taking the wide receiver and didn't kind of reach for a quarterback?
Oh, absolutely. And I wanted them to get not a quarterback. I wanted them to get the right quarterback, right? And I put a lot of, we try and do our best to evaluate this stuff. And I thought Caleb Williams and Drake May were surefire. You take them if they're available to you. And when all that trade up smoke was there with the Patriots, I was one of the people wanting to do that. Jaden Daniels is someone I would take a swing on, but I'd be worried. I don't have the most confidence that he's going to succeed in the NFL. And you mentioned with our surroundings, I don't think it'd be a great fit. And then J.J. McCarthy was, I don't want to draft him because I don't think he's going to be that good in the NFL. Right? I think he'll look pretty good in Minnesota, but at the end of the day, I think you're going to be wanting more. So if they were left with the J.J. McCarthy versus wide receiver, then I was wide receiver 10 times out of 10. But I was worried that under the Giants, QB situation is it's not good right now, and there's no clear answer going forward, right? Joe Shane will be going into year four next year, probably looking for a new quarterback. We don't know if this draft class will be any good, and if it is, we don't know if the Giants will be in position to be, and I don't think they will. I don't think they'll be picking top three. So it would have been very easy for Joe Shane to give in to the pressure and be like, you know what? I don't know how long of a leash I'm going to have here. I'm just going to take a quarterback, and if this works out, awesome, I have a job. If not, then I am moving on to my next endeavor. So the pressure was on to get a quarterback for the Giants this year, but I thought they made the right decision by going Malik Nabers, because I just don't think J.J. McCarthy is a franchise quarterback type of guy.
Before I bring Kieran in on this, I just wanted to ask you a quick one, kind of a follow-up. After the draft, there was a lot of kind of people felt there was a bit like damage control in terms of Adam Schefter coming out with certain quotes around the Giants were looking to move up, but it wasn't necessarily for the quarterback, it was for Joe Alt. I didn't really buy into that. Did you feel that was coming from the Giants, that they kind of wanted to save face because, Daniel Jones may be very aware of what's going on, but you would think in the lead up to the draft, bearing in mind the amount of work and scrutiny they did on quarterbacks, Daniel Jones knew inevitably if the quarterback was there for them, whether they got the right move in terms of moving up, they were going to select the quarterback. And I didn't really buy into this narrative, this storyline was coming from the Giants inside the Giants camp.
Yeah, there's no way, especially with the offers that were reported. There's no way they were trading all that up for Joe Alt as a tackle. If they felt that strong about Joe Alt, they would have traded down and picked another offensive line. Like, there's just that, like you said, that was damage control. And it was reported by basically everyone else. They were trading up for Drake May. So, yeah, that was some post-draft damage control there, which didn't work. Like, Daniel Jones is not stupid. Like, he knows that they were trying to get a quarterback.
And I think we were, you know, the consensus is that Neighbors was a great pick. I mean, he's the wide receiver one that we've been screaming out for since Odell Beckham Jr. His tape, you know, listen to your show earlier in the week. I mean, like you said, it's a highlight reel. It's just nonstop highlight reel. He's here a certified wide receiver one. He's up there. Hopefully he's going to be up there with the likes of Chase, Justin Jefferson. I wanted to talk about two of the picks and get your opinion. Tyler Newbin, the safety from Minnesota. We felt like he dropped. We were talking on the podcast. We felt he dropped a little bit, mainly, I think, and a lot of other people think too, the 40 time was a little slow. That kind of kept him out of the first round. But I think his ability, he's a hard hitter, creates turnover. I think that's a huge pickup in the second round. I know you were excited about it doing the live draft. I think that's a massive pickup in a position, that's especially losing McKinney to Green Bay. And I just want to get your thoughts on Newbin and also Theo Johnson. I know you were, you know, over the moon to get Theo Johnson, the tight end realm. And we'll probably touch, if we have time at the end, about Waller's availability going forward. But I think Theo Johnson, you know, 6'6", he's got your classic tight end kind of statistics. 6'6", he ran a 4.57 in the 40. Great season last year with Penn State. 6 touchdowns, 32 catches, 325 yards. Is he the guy that's going to take over from Waller?
Yeah, so I'll start with Newbin. He's an incredibly intelligent player. You know, he knows how to watch film and study and figure out what a quarterback's ticks are and what an offense is doing and put himself in place to take chances, take calculated chances. And, you know, I did the video on him, and it's like, man, like, these are crazy risks, but it's not just a reckless player, right? It's someone who knows what the offense is doing. He's getting the tail out of what a formation and getting there. And he's just he was the most versatile safety in the class. You know, like, I think his man coverage is pretty solid. They can play the run well. And then we all know, like, the zone game-changing interception type of plays. And the 40 time drives me crazy because the NFL never learns from their mistakes when it comes to these safeties, right? Like, look at the 40 times for, like, some of the best safeties that come out over the last, you know, handful of years. Brian Branch last year fell into the middle of the second round, ran a 4.58. Guess what? He was pretty damn good his rookie season. Kyle Hamilton ran a 4.59. He was all pro last year. Xavier McKinney ran a 4.63. He's just got $17 million per year. Geno Stone ran a 4.62. He got 7 interceptions last year. Hufanga ran a 4.65. He got, you know, was all pro 2 years ago. Safety is the ultimate, like, yeah, it'd be cool to have the fast 40 time, but the most important thing is your eyes and where you go. So that's why I think Tyler Newbin, like, the 40 time doesn't worry me at all. And then with Theo Johnson, now there's projection here, right? He was my second tight end in the class after Brock Bowers. But like you said, he's just cookie cutter tight end size with the athleticism, with the blocking. And I think he can actually run routes a little bit. There needs to be cleaned up and be more consistent. But I love that pick. I'm not guaranteeing it's going to, you know, I said before the draft, right, when I didn't think the Giants would take a tight end, that if there was one tight end that we look back in this class, like we have with so many tight ends who go on day two and day three, and this guy really turned out. How did the NFL miss on this? It was Theo Johnson. So to get him in the fourth round, someone who I had as a second-round player, I was absolutely thrilled with.
Bobby, Tyrone Tracy's an interesting pick. Bearing in mind he's 25 years of age, and obviously we've had the scenario with COVID where some players are coming into the league later. Is he a realistic option for this season, bearing in mind the nature of Saquon's departure and Devin Singletary coming in? We're not stacked in that position. We're going to need running backs to relieve the pressure on the offensive line and the quarterback over the course of the season if to remain competitive in games. Is he a realistic shot to get in there? Because we saw Eric Gray come in last year, a bit of excitement when he was drafted, but it didn't really materialize for him last year, maybe because of his blocking ability. But is he getting a legitimate opportunity to go in and kind of solidify himself as the number two?
I think so, right? I think it's going to be a true battle between, like, a lot of times we talk about position battles, and it's like pretty much written in, like, who's going to end up winning it unless, you know, that person completely falters. I do think it'll be a true battle between Eric Gray and Tyrone Tracy after Devin Singletary, and that running back two is more important on the Giants than it has been in 6 years, because we're not going to be giving somebody 98%, 95% of the carries like we have with Saquon Barkley in the past. So I think he has the chance. He has more like athletic ability to create those big plays. And like you mentioned with Eric Gray, now Eric Gray got a little bit of run last year against Miami, and I know the numbers weren't good, but I actually liked what I saw as a runner. The issue with him is when you watch those preseason games, like, oh, you can't put him on the field because of how bad the blocking is, right? It's one thing to not be a good blocker. He was like, you just cannot put him on the field. You cannot put him on the field because of the blocking ability. So if he's improved in that, we'll see how Tyrone Tracy was clearly better than Eric Gray at blocking, but didn't blow you away. So I do think it's going to be a true battle between those two guys. And right now I would lean Tracy, because he kind of gives you more of that change of pace than where I think Eric Gray and Devin Singletary are actually pretty similar types of players, at least like, types, maybe not as the level of, ability, but type-wise.
Okay, Bobby, let's move on to the O-line. We'll kind of do it a two-part. We'll talk about Evan Neal as well and what we can expect from him. I'm guessing we like the pickups, Runyon and Stinney, and I'll try his name here, Jermaine
Elmanor. I've gotten that one down pat. Elmanor.
I'm still working on that one. I think we can all agree that upgrades were made in the line, but we need Andrew Thomas fit and ready. We need a bit of an upgrade from JMS, and the X factor is Evan Neal. Year three, it's fair to say he's already been classed as a bust. He didn't help with his mouth last year. Then this is the questions about moving to guard if it doesn't work out. The caveat is Bobby Johnson's no longer there, and we got Carmen Brasillo, who turned the Raiders into a top 10 O-line. What should we expect Brasillo to do with Neal, and do we expect Neal to last at RT for the rest of the season?
Well, if Neal's going to play this year, it's going to be at right tackle. I just don't see him being a fit to move to guard with some of his footwork and foot speed stuff. I don't want to speculate too much on what Carmen Brasillo is going to do. I think a lot of times we bring in these new coaches and we champion them as saviors, and then they could be good coaches, but at the end of the day, the players got to be the ones who go out there and perform. With the offensive line, I'm worried that the Giants have just not prioritized it outside of that first year, right? Where the year one, they didn't have much cap space, but they spent it on offensive line, right? With Mark Lewinsky and John Feliciano. It was like their number one and number three signings, cap-wise. And then drafting Evan Neal, drafting Josh Azudu, and then Marcus McKeithen on day three. Last year in 2022, they went into the draft with not having a real center on the roster and almost got John Michael Smith sniped from them, and then forced JMS to be the only true center on the roster, and he struggled as a rookie. And then your second-best interior guy in Ben Bredesen literally had to start at all three different positions. So let alone the starters, it wasn't great depth. And then this year, I love the Elmanor signing. I love that. That was a great value. I think he's a solid player. But I'm still worried about the guard spot, right? John Runyon was a middle-tier signing in free agency, right? They didn't go and just get, like, we need to go get one of the top guards. They got a middle-of-the-road type of guy. Those guys can elevate, or they can be like, hey, okay, they're not even as good as what we thought happened with Mark Lewinsky. So I'm just worried about John Runyon as your number two guard. Does JMS develop? Who is the backup to JMS? Probably Austin Schlottman. And then the other starting guard, I'm sorry, I don't want it to be Elmanor or Evan Neal. There should be a plan there for someone to start there. And you should let Elmanor or Evan Neal win that job. And guess what? For the loser of that job, that guy should be the backup at offensive tackle. Not backing up at three positions or moving to a starting guard spot in the middle of the camp. I'm worried that they've half-assed it with the starting group. And then after that, it's like, what's the depth going to be? Because if the starting group is worrisome, where is the depth? And so I'm worried about that offensive line, despite the fact they made improvements, but there was nowhere to go but up last year. A big part of it is, can Andrew Thomas stay healthy too? Because he is... We saw what happened when he went out last year, and it was the worst thing I've ever seen in front of a quarterback.
Bobby, just to double down on that, you're going to get the sense going into training camp. I know we're a couple of months away from training camp. It's going to be treating a kind of a rotational type thing, and let's see, can we find the ones that fit the best, or is it a case of they go in and they're comfortable that they know which ones are going to play in the appropriate positions, and they try to kind of get them to kind of consolidate and get used to being around one another. Ours very much, as you touched on there, it's open season. We'll see what works, and then come week one, that's what we'll slot together in terms of the offensive line.
Sorry, my mic was muted. Could you say that last part again?
And just in terms of the training camp, you're going to get the sense it'll be a case of they'll try to figure out on the fly during the training camp which is the right rotation for the
I do, line. which I hate that. And I think they did that last year, right? Last year they begged Josh Azuda to win the starting guard job, and he didn't do it. So now he's like, okay, Ben Bredesen got like essentially punished for being the best on the interior last year. We're like, okay, well, we could just practice you at every single position. And, you know, he ended up playing like a little bit of left guard last year, starting games at center, starting games at right guard, and he fell off, you know, compared to the year before. So I do think they're going to do that. But I want this team to have a starting group, even if it's not the best starting group, and then have just true backups, right? Have your starting five, and guess what? If that starter, if it's Evan Neal and he's not performing, okay, we put in Jermaine Eliminor as the backup, right? If, you know, Josh Azuda is your starting guard and you try and it doesn't work, okay, we have a backup guard. But it seems like the loser of the right tackle job is the backup at four positions on the offensive line right now, which is worrisome.
In terms of Shane and Dable, like, and I use kind of approaches on the podcast recently just after the draft, that next season kind of becomes a pivotal season. You touched on the fourth year. If they had to take it a quarterback, you could argue that at the end of the season, whether it's a win season or you know, a pretty bad season, there's an argument to say to John Mara, developing team, developing quarterback, that's gone away now. There's essentially no conversation there. So do they put themselves in a situation? And I'll throw it in there, because it's inevitable it's going to come up throughout the course of next season, the Bill Belichick factor, that he's lurking in the background, that John Mara maybe can't help himself but consider, you know, bringing Belichick back to the Giants if it wasn't a successful season. And ultimately that means Shane and Dable may not be there next year.
I think at the end of the day, it depends on how their players that they drafted and have signed in free agency are working out, right? If that 2022 class, Kayvon takes the jump, right? Wandale's been like, get something out there. And then I think the 2023 class is the most pivotal, though, right? Because 2022, we got a good feel on it. If Evan Neal gets good out of nowhere, that's obviously huge. But can Deontay Banks go from flashes to just a legitimate cornerback one? Can Jalen Michael Schmitz become a good starting center in the NFL? That's like something that can happen. Can Jalen Hyde develop into a better wide receiver where you can make Darius Slayton expendable? And then, you know, with the day three guys, can one or two of those guys just be contributing players? And then the 2023 class, having some guys who hit the ground running too, like Malik Nabers being a rookie of the year candidate, Tyler Newbin being a good starting safety, and then obviously like the Okereke's, the Burns, Brian Burns, those guys coming down. But if it's just like, yep, the 2023 class, or 2024 class, we're talking about, hey, man, you got to give them some time, and 2023 class looks like 22 after 2 years, then I feel like you got to have the decision, because it's just, you got to build a good roster. You got to get a quarterback. And if you have neither after 3 years without some reasonable sight of that happening, then I think you talk about it. But I think Brian Dable's a good coach, and I think he's going to squeeze some wins out of this team. I don't think they're going to be in that situation.
Yeah. And when we had Justin on, you know, we kind of brought that topic up too. We thought, you know, is year three going to be it for the Dable and Shane connection? We bandied a couple of things around. Unless, obviously, it's an absolutely disastrous season, worse than last year, you'd have to say that they're going to get a chance to let this draft class work, and especially Kayvon and Evan Neal. And, you know, you also got to consider that the wink factor in the background is not there anymore. The Bobby Johnson factor is not there anymore. Maybe we'll be looking at a more relaxed Dable on the sideline, and, get Shane Bowen, get that kind of chemistry going that he probably didn't have with Wink towards the end of the season. Well, he definitely didn't have with Wink towards the end of the season. I think I personally do get the Belichick link, but I you have to think that Mara is going to give him another year at least on top of all this. But that's all going to depend on our next topic, which is Mr. Daniel Jones. I mean, where do we see this going next year, Bobby? I mean, we're on set the second year of the $160 million contract. You know, it's essentially the last year of the contract. But, you know, are we going to see the Daniel Jones against Arizona in week two, or are we going to see the hobbling around in Miami in the heat? So That's the factor.
I think we're going to find somewhere in the middle, and it'll end up being his last year as a New York Giant. You know, I don't think there's much Daniel Jones can do besides just play flat out great to be getting, you know, to see year three of that contract. And I'm sure Joe Shane wishes he didn't restructure it during training camp last year. The time it felt good because he just was awesome in training. We were there live. It's like, this guy is falling, and then it fell apart. So this seems like the last year. Now, the tide has swung a little too far on DJ, right? Because of last year was awful, right? Whether it was the outside, you know, the surrounding factors of, you know, the offensive line and like the offensive line was really bad in front of him without Andrew Thomas, right? It's not the offensive line was still bad with Andrew Thomas, but it was just something like you never seen. But DJ was still leaving throws on the table. Teams had kind of adjusted to what Brian Daboll had done with him. And like, you know, the Seahawks pick six is the one that, you know, stands out the most. So I think we got our answers on some of the questions we had, even when he signed that contract. So I think this is the last year of Daniel Jones, but I don't think it's going to look god off. I think he's going to look like what he looked like for 3 years, which is like some good QB play, some bad QB play here and there, not a ton of mistakes. And you know, like Malik Nabers will help. So I think even if you see the best version of Daniel Jones, I still think it's probably going to be his last year. Because I think they've had their answers on, oh, this guy is just not aggressive as a quarterback, and we need an aggressive quarterback in this offense, yeah, right? That was the question coming out of 2022 when he played well and they made the playoffs. It was like, this guy made basically no mistakes except for a handful of plays that were left on the field. Now, they had a bad O-line. They only had one vertical threat in Darius Slayton, right? And so when they added Waller and Hyatt, it's like, okay, now we're going to get answers. And we got answers. He just was not aggressive. So unless he plays really good, mistake-free, and aggressive, and has the results, which I don't see happening, I think it's his last year. Because I think he's an inherently conservative quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, when we saw him take the break so often, he just aired it out, especially the Cardinals game. We're like, that's the Daniel Jones we all know and love from last year. But it's just the inconsistency, it's the injuries, it's everything else. I think
Injuries are big too, yeah. like you said.
It's, and you know, he's got more miles under the road, the neck is the issue, the ankle's the injury, the concern, now it's the knee. How long, you know, every Giant fan will be holding the breath with every snap basically. But you know, you would like to think that when he's on the field, he's got that downhill threat with whether it be Nabers or Johnson or somebody to throw that down there to, and maybe take the training wheels off and just air it out with just abandon, because this is the make or break year for him. We'll see how he...
Bobby, can I ask a quick question on Jones last year? And I know the sample size is quite small because he didn't play a lot of games, and the year after he was obviously injured in some of the games. Did you get the sense at the start of the season they expected, obviously take the contract aside, that there was an expectation that they were trying to move the offense onto another level from the previous season where it was very much play in a particular way that's controlled, he doesn't make many mistakes, and he felt, okay, we've gone to the divisional round, you had a really stellar game in the wild card against the Vikings, let's see a little bit more of next season. And that season he just couldn't fulfill the promise that there was an expectation of.
Yeah, they were a slow team in 2022, right? Like, they didn't have the speed to create the explosive anyways outside of Darius Slayton. Like I said, there was a handful of plays they left on the table in 22, but it truly was a handful, and he made the right decision, like down in, down out. It was good football, but it's hard to replicate like that perfection type of football in the NFL. So it was well known. The Giants' goal in the last offseason, to get faster. They add Jalen Hyatt. They add Darren Waller. And you saw in the way they ran the offense the first few games of the year, it was different. They were trying to be more explosive. And guys were open, right? It wasn't nonstop, and a lot of times the offensive line broke down and you weren't able to get this. But there was a good amount of times where it's like, oh gosh, like now those handful of missed throws last year, you feel a lot worse about them, knowing that, okay, he is just truly passing this up. This isn't what they're instilling in him because of the personnel. So, and then you saw Tyrod Taylor do it. Did Tyrod Taylor come in and play great quarterbacking? No, but he showed the explosive element that this Brian Daboll offense is begging to have at quarterback. And Tyrod Taylor had been a pretty conservative quarterback his entire career too, but in that Daboll offense in that last year, you saw just big plays consistently created, despite the fact that he's not like some great quarterback.
Yeah, and we've been, I mean, it's been a very offense heavy discussion, and you know, we'll talk about Darren Waller as well. I mean, we got the Kelce Plum divorce looming in the background. Still, the Giants are still waiting on a decision. That's the reason they picked Theo Johnson in the fourth. Not a stellar year for Waller. 52 receptions, 52 yards, the single touchdown. Do we think he's coming back? What do you think, Bobby?
I don't think he's coming back, right? Like, how can you? Like, he clearly doesn't want to. The only thing that's leaning tough is it's hard to walk away from millions of dollars. But, like, if he wanted to come back, he'd be back. It's been, I mean, he's been contemplating this for 3-4 months now, right? Like, we had heard the rumors like a month before the announcement came out, which was right around the combine. So, you know, right after the Super Bowl is basically when we started hearing that. I don't think he's been, and I don't want him back, honestly. Like, and I don't look at him like, oh, last year he was a disappointment. When he got injured versus the Jets, he was leading tight ends and receiving yards in the NFL, right? And a horrible passing offense, he was leading tight ends and receiving yards. So, like, he's valuable, but with the fact that he's not going to be all in, he's going to miss games. Like, you just have to count that. He's a negative in the blocking aspect. How good of a receiver will he be this year? Will there be fall off? To me, I would either save that money and have it roll over to the next year, or go out and try and find a veteran cornerback to play on the outside, whether it's an Adoree Jackson, bringing back Adoree Jackson, or, you know, somebody else that you feel confident in.
It strikes me, Stryker, and it strikes me as one of those scenarios we've seen over the last couple of years, not necessarily with the Giants, where players come into camp and within 2 weeks they say, no, I'm done. And it's like, it feels like the Giants, he'll give it one more opportunity because the Giants didn't make the trade for him. He probably didn't fulfill the potential ultimately over the course of the season. He'll come back, his heart's not in it. And within a week or so of training camp, we'll get this announcement that he's walking away. It just strikes me as that type of scenario.
Yeah. I mean, it's taking forever, right? Like, at some point, you just need to fly out and make a decision. And I think the longer it goes, I think the Giants are expecting a retirement, right? So they're not going to let him retire on his own terms. But, you know, there is a chance that as you get close, like, you know, admit, you may like be in a, like, just even make it an old personal, you may be like, man, this work situation or whatever, it sucks, right? I don't want to do it anymore. But when it comes time to throw that paycheck away, it makes it a lot tougher. You know, you swallow your pride a little bit. So that's like, the further it goes along, the more I think it's a possibility. Even though other people think it's like, the further it goes along, the more likely he retires.
Yeah, and as long, you know, he's got his rap career going on. I'm sure his head is not in the game right now. He's got all these other distractions, obviously, the main one that's going on. And just like Brian, you know, outlined, it's looking like Splitsville in a lot of different ways for Darren Waller. Maybe we'll just finish up, Bobby, in a quick, you know, a quick hot take, a quick prediction for 24 season. Who do we see as being a standout? What do we think? I'm not going to ask for a record because that's asinine, but who are we looking to shine, and who are we really looking forward to seeing out there on the field?
I think Tyler Newbin's going to have a great rookie season, right? Malik Nabers, I don't think it's a hot take to think that he's going to look really good as a rookie. I think Tyler Newbin's going to come in and be really good, and he's going to get, you know, 3-4 interceptions and be a good run. Like, I think he's going to be a fan favorite by the end of the year. I don't know if he would get Defensive Rookie of the Year honors, because you got to have one just volume stats. It's hard for safeties to win that position, that anyways. And you got to be on a good team too if you're going to be at the safety position. So I think Tyler Newbin is going to have an outstanding rookie season with the Giants. And I think I'll give you a record prediction. I think they're going 8-9.
Mark it down. If Newman doesn't have the good season, people will be more comfortable with the decision not to bring McKinney back on the contract. I mean, you got alluded to his contract from the Packers, but they didn't find a way to get it done. But I think if Newman comes in and starts the season off, well, I think people will quickly forget that McKinney's not around anymore.
Yeah, and the McKinney thing, I hate seeing McKinney go, right? It would have been awesome to keep McKinney and just be able to draft a different player in the second round. But I view McKinney as essentially like a trade for Brian Burns, right? Like, if they didn't trade for Brian Burns, I don't think there's any reason to not have McKinney on this team. But they viewed like, okay, we have an opportunity to go get Brian Burns at a more important position, you know, like a kind of a better player in the league, and they did it. But if they didn't do that, McKinney should have been here. So But yeah, it will make you feel better if Newman comes in and plays Rowe right away.
And we didn't need that. He is, I suppose, the marquee free agency. Well, it's not a free agency acquisition. It's a trade from the Panthers. Boltby, he is the biggest name to come in this offseason. Bobby, really appreciate your time. It's great having you on. Hopefully we'll get you back on near the season and we can kind of start looking at the schedule in more detail and making you can give us those 8 wins and we can chalk them down very early. We know where they're coming from. We really appreciate you giving up your time to come on the Irish NFL show.
No, I appreciate you guys very much. I'm actually, I'm just saying 8 and 9. I need to go actually, like you said, look through the schedule and chalk those as win, chalk the wins and losses. So,
sounds good.
Yeah,
I'll take that.
Appreciate you guys very much, and thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks, Bob.
And we're not far off the schedule, and there is speculation that the Giants are playing in Munich against the Panthers. Speculation. We do not know the word, but it may
get a win overseas. That's what we we're undefeated overseas.
It may get revealed in the coming hours or in the next day or two. Stick with the Irish NFL show for more content as we get closer to the NFL schedule being released next Wednesday.